the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
And so let's talk about football with Tony Cascarino and Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent. And Miguel, in the last hour, we've discovered that Real Madrid have sacked Xabi Alonso as manager. A man who was much coveted a couple of years ago this year when he went to the job, has been spoken about as a possible Liverpool successor to Jurgen Klopp. Could he be the man that Manchester United are looking for, Miguel?
Well, I've just finished writing about this. United have actually considered him in the past. Now, the Madrid one is typically interesting given, A, it's Madrid. It's like they've taken a lot of the themes of the last week, especially with United getting rid of a manager, Chelsea getting rid of a manager, to their own extremes in that way they do. Now, Alonso is getting hammered in Spain for how he coached the team. But again, I think Madrid are so idiosyncratic, and they've actually always been such a kind of a star-led, manager-resistant club that, well, I think most sporting executives are not really going to consider this as any way damaging for his career. It's actually maybe a little bit, maybe some echoes of Amorim, but I think Alonso's actually going to be seen better. People will more look to his work at Bayer Leverkusen. And yeah, I think actually this is, it's not just significant for Madrid. I actually think this is very significant for top-level football going into the summer, because this is a massive name coming into the manager market where, despite what's happened in Madrid, I think a lot of major clubs are going to be looking at him. United have to look at him despite the Liverpool connection.
Tony, he won 10 of his first 11 La Liga games. They've slipped back since then, but they're in second. They're only 4 points behind Barcelona. Yes, they lost in the final of the Spanish Super Cup last night, but they've won 4 of their 6 Champions League games. Is this an example, perhaps, of player power, that the highly paid players at Real Madrid, the Mbappes and the rest of it, didn't like being made to work and be disciplined in the way that Alonso believes the team should be?
Well, Matt, I watched the game last night against Barcelona, and Barcelona were clearly the better team. Although it was a tight game, Mbappe was on the bench. Barcelona look a far more accomplished team. And I think that doesn't bode well for Xavi Alonso, Matt, because they're quite pragmatic for a Real Madrid team. You know, if you think of the Benzema, Ronaldo, Bale, and all these type of players that they had in forward areas, they were a counter-attacking team yesterday. And I think, because they've struggled, and like you said, they started the season well, as it's wore on, they haven't looked anywhere close to the level of Barcelona. And look, whatever the agreement between, we don't know if he left or he just resigned, Matt, or he was sacked. We don't really know the truth to that at the moment. But what I did see last night is a Real Madrid team that is a long way short, even though the scoreline was 3-2. That's not good enough for Real Madrid.
So you raise an interesting point there, though. Is there a thing, a cultural thing for a club like Real Madrid, a bit like Manchester United might fancy itself has been as well, that they have to be seen to be the attacking team on the front foot, that it just doesn't sit with the Real Madrid way to be a counter-attacking side?
No, Matt, look, certain teams in Europe and all around the globe, there's teams, whether it's Bayern Munich in Germany, whether it's Barcelona, Real Madrid in Spain, you know, you could look at Juventus in the past, although that's Italian football. PSG have to play that way. We know that Liverpool and Manchester United, their history tells you that they have to play at a certain attacking style, and Real Madrid don't. Then they're not a front foot team that go after you in every position. They're actually the reverse, Matt. And I think that always comes at a price at Real Madrid, because most of us would argue that Real Madrid are the biggest club in the world. So to them to play in a manner they do, I don't think it sits well with the Madrid fans, and I don't think it sits well with people in Spanish football in general.
Okay. Miguel, will he end up in England, Alonso? Can you see a Manchester United? I mean, if Slot doesn't go well for the rest of the season, could he be in at Liverpool next year? Could Liverpool decide that they have to get him before he could end up at Manchester United or elsewhere?
I must say, I don't think Liverpool will act like that. And they have tried to take the longer view on Slot. And let's not remember, actually, or let's not forget, up until February 2024, Alonso had been seen as almost a shoo-in for Liverpool. Now, I suppose there's a bit of a debate about the chronology there. Liverpool were soon basically putting out the idea that actually it was, after assessing all the data they had available, it was Slot who was always their number one choice. other outsiders might consider that a little bit convenient if that came after they found out that Alonso absolutely wanted Real Madrid at the time. So I can't see Liverpool making that sort of strategic decision. I don't think that's the way they operate. But if the slot situation were to worsen and things were to pick up, that's where this gets more intriguing, because you have to think they consider it.
Okay, and then tell us, Miguel, what's the update today? Is it going to be definitely Michael Carrick for the rest of the season at Manchester United?
Yes, but to be fair, this was signalled from about the middle of last week that United had a few considerations for their interim. One was obviously someone who can just steady things, but and also a big one, less important, but part of it, was also they were conscious of, given they're bringing in kind of young coaches who have been associated with the club, whether it be someone who doesn't necessarily take over in May, which I suppose a lot of people might think could have happened with Solskjaer, but someone who could maybe be seen as potential for the future. And Carrick fitted the bill better there. I have to say, I think it's a better decision. Like, as okay as Solskjaer did with United, they've been true that it's the same old cycle. Even the way people are talking about how if we went well, they'd feel obliged to give them the job. Also, if you look at it coldly, so, I mean, especially at this sort of club, and even how the game has moved on in 5 years, especially as regards the extent of pressing and all this sort of thing. Like, Solskjaer, outside Norway and Manchester United, his only jobs have been at Cardiff, who were, you know, on the brink of getting relegated, and the third biggest club in the eighth biggest league, Besiktas in Turkey. I think it makes more sense to go with Carrick, who is a bright young coach, has an encouraging stint at Middlesbrough, even if it didn't end all that encouragingly. And also, there's even another element. Solskjaer, I think when he speaks about his job, you see he gets so emotional about it. I mean, ironically, that's probably a reason not to appoint him, because I think you have to look at these things a bit more coldly.
One of the most telling stats that's come out of yesterday's defeat at home to Brighton in the FA Cup, and by the way, Brighton, I think, in the draw, are going to go into Liverpool, assuming Liverpool beat Barnsley this evening. It's Liverpool against Brighton in the next round of the Cup. But leaving that aside, the most number of games that Manchester United are going to have this season now is going to be 40. 38 Premier League games, nothing in Europe, out in the first round of the EFL Cup because of the defeat at Grimsby, and out yesterday in the third round of the FA Cup against Brighton. The financial implications of that must be absolutely enormous, because fewer games for the ground revenues, less television appearance money, and presumably as well, all the various sponsorships must have clauses in them, Miguel, which reduce payments to Manchester United. This in a month when they also have to pay the entire balance of Amorim's contract makes it look like more cutbacks might be coming from Jim Ratcliffe.
So I actually don't think that's going to happen, because there has been some murmurs from the club that they, I mean, and this could have been obvious to anyone, and especially anyone who's worked in sport and is concerned with the idea of culture, that actually there was a feeling from those close to Ratcliffe, potentially right up to Ratcliffe himself, that actually for the little money, really negligible money, they saved those cutbacks, it was counterproductive as regards to kind of the culture at the club. Ratcliffe has, and those around him, have also been talking up commercial performance of late. Don't hold me to this. This is my own estimation. I actually don't think they'll take that decision this time. And maybe there's a bit of a belief around the club that they've made most of those major decisions. And now I suppose it's about looking to next season. This one, outside potentially getting into the Champions League, which to be fair is still big for all the sense of writing off the season. But it's about now looking to what next, and with the Champions League obviously part of that.
Okay. Tony, you wrote a piece in the Times today, which was a damning takedown of Oliver Glasner, the man who many people say could be the next Manchester United manager, despite the fact that he favours the type of formation which didn't work for Amorim. But you were distinctly unimpressed by his deportment on the sideline as the cup holders, Crystal Palace, went out to Macclesfield in possibly the biggest ever FA Cup shock of all time, given that I know we don't give the competition the same amount of respect, perhaps, as we used to, but it meant a damn sight to Crystal Palace to win it last summer, and to lose it in the circumstances that they did yesterday said a lot, didn't it? Or on Saturday.
It did, Matt. You know, watching the game and, you know, the traits that some managers have, and I talked a little bit about that in my piece, was, you know, that when a player misses a chance or a misplaced pass and he turns around to his bench and has his arms open a bit. You know, Matt, let's get it right. His players have been fantastic for him. OK, they've done brilliantly well. And yes, they've sold players and they get FA Cup final. And I didn't question the commitment of the Palace team. They didn't play well. That's for sure. And Macclesfield got in their faces and make it difficult. But I felt like he was a manager to me that just really didn't take responsibility of going to the press and then going, do you know what? I'll have to take this today. We didn't play well. Fair play to Macclesfield. But my team have been fantastic for me. My players have covered. They've played more games than anybody else, Matt, in the Premier League and in with European competitions, cup competitions. And largely, they've been absolutely brilliant for them. You know, Palace are a club, Matt. Up until Brennan Johnson, who's just gone for 35 million, their record signing, you have to go back to Christian Benteke. They're not a spending club. They're not a club that invests as much as many other clubs around them. Like, you know, what Sunderland did in the summer. And I just felt it was a real strange take. And honestly, Matt, sometimes I'm seeing some strange behaviour on the touchline with all the staff and the high-fiving. I saw it with Charlton and Liam Rosario.
Chelsea the other day, the new Chelsea manager, yeah.
All the high-fiving over every goal, Matt. And I just feel these traits in football of all this coaching, what is going on, and then for a manager to be so damning on a side that's done brilliantly well for him.
Okay, what do you think? Is Glasner sort of disappearing from consideration, Miguel? And what do you make of the cup holders allowing themselves to go out in that way?
It's the funny thing about the manager market in that way, and I have it almost kind of goes up and down like the stock market, in that Glasner, a lot of jobs might actually now become available for Glasner at exactly the wrong moment. Perception is a big thing. You know, he would have been on so many lists. Well, he was on so many lists up until December. Obviously, on the back of that FA Cup win, and he had Palace top five for a time. And now suddenly, because of issues related, because the squad is stretched going into Europe, all the rest of it, they've plummeted down the table. And now he's just naturally he's going to be seen in a bit of a different light. I mean, you would hope that so executive teams at clubs now, they do take a bit of a kind of a longer-term approach to this. Some do. They try to introduce kind of data and analytics to coach selection in that way, in the same way to do with players. But perception is big, and especially when it comes to the big jobs, because I think as has become a bit of a theme in the last 2 weeks, having the personality to carry the weight of these jobs is crucial. Like I was talking to someone from Manchester United last week who said, you never know what someone's going to be like until they walk into the door and can manage this. And I suppose on the other side, or as you say about the cup... The cup defeat. I mean, to be fair, like I have to say, one thing I've been thinking about all this, we've probably had a good 25 years now, 26, of the meaning of the FA Cup being constantly discussed, really since, you know, United didn't play in it that year when they went to Brazil for the first Club World Cup under some pressure, it must be said, because of the FA's World Cup bid and because of all sorts of kind of the way the game is going, focus on the Premier League. And it does feel true a little bit now, and because of the recent change to the cup, games ending on the day. And in all of this, like I think this was a badly needed story. And from speaking to people around Palace as well, they don't begrudge it because of what it means. It's a great human story, Macclesfield's win.
The best tie of the fourth round in the draw that's just been done, I think, Tony, is Aston Villa against Newcastle. But Aston Villa won at Tottenham. And Thomas Frank would have been spoken about previously as a possible Manchester United manager. Now people are wondering how much longer Tottenham will actually keep him.
Yeah, look, and Miguel's touched on it there, management and how difficult you could be flavour of the month, Matt, and then completely shunned after that. I thought they were terrible against Villa first half at the weekend, Matt. They didn't play well. They kept giving the ball away in all positions. Villa dominated, took it to them, and it only became a game in the second half once Spurs had scored, Matt. And Thomas Frank, it's a huge challenge. I thought, fair play to him when he got the job, you know, a great opportunity for him to try and bring Tottenham back to some sort of success. But they're a long way off, Matt. It just tells you how hard management is. It's as tough as it's ever been. And I think, you know, anytime you said to me Villa play Tottenham, I'll take Villa's team because there's a lot of players in the Spurs lineup. I don't think we're even close to the Villa standard.
Thank you very much, Tony Cascarino, for being with us. And also Miguel Delaney, chief football writer of The Independent.
the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.